There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on a Monday. Hey, y'all, Sean Sullivan, live local talk over the next couple of hours. Got lots of things lined up. I mean, I guess in lieu of covering apartment fires for the majority of a newscast, sorry, TV, you know, instead of doing that, we've got some other subject. Maybe, I mean, we could just do apartment fires. I mean, we could talk about those, but... Seems best, something best left for television, doesn't it? All right. On today's show, coming up in hour number two of the show, we're going to get into today the end of net neutrality on the books. Today's the last day. So get your net neutral stuff done today. End over net neutrality. Had a conversation about a month and a half ago with FCC Chairman Ajit Pai, and I'll play some clips from that interview about the ruling on net neutrality, and we'll get your comments coming up in hour number two. Also on the way, I get this question. I put this question in the phone over the weekend. Is this what national marijuana legalization looks like? Is that where we're heading? We're going to get into the discussion. What is the proposal coming out of Congress that President Trump said he would possibly get behind? What does it mean for individual states? And once again, I look at this. To me, I'm interested in it for a couple reasons. Number one, obviously the business side of it. But number two, what it means for federal versus state law. And, you know, everybody's going to get hung up on the marijuana part. We'll talk about it. I mean, Lord knows, one of the few people in this business that has nothing to hide, so I'm not worried about it. I'm not a consumer of said drug, so I'll talk about it. But, I mean, I'm academically very interested in the discussion. But, yeah, there's the marijuana part of it that they will talk about, but also the other part of this is when the feds can overrule the states. I mean, we've seen this several times. So we're going to get into the nuance within the Controlled Substances Act from 1970-something that was passed that gives this little bit of a carve-out, and it seems to be what the members of Congress are holding on to here to try to get the feds out of the business of criminalizing marijuana. So I'll get to that in just a second. But first, I want to get into IHOB. Well, the response now from Whataburger, Dalton, I don't know if you saw that, Whataburger on Twitter has said, as much as we love our pancakes, we'd never change our name to What a Pancake. Okay, so Whataburger is getting into the mix. I have not seen if Wendy's on Twitter, we got to go see. Wendy's happens to be one of the better follows on Twitter. The woman that runs that Wendy's account is... She could write comedy at national level. She's extremely funny, extremely fast. But this all comes, this beef, so to speak, comes with International House of Pancakes now becoming International House of Burgers. Is that it?
Yeah, that's correct. And Wendy's has answered. Just
good. Thank goodness. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, just 1 hour ago, someone said, Wendy's, like, why aren't you getting in on this conversation? Whataburger's right. Even answered by now.
Right.
Wendy said, not really afraid of the burgers from a place that decided pancakes were too hard. So Wendy's has answered back to IHOP, changing their name to International House of Burgers.
Oh, okay. Now I've seen another one. Okay, what did he say? Remember when you were like 7 and thought changing your name to Thunder Bear Sword would be super cool? Like that, but our cheeseburgers are still better.
Wow.
See, it really, y'all, I mean, if you're on Twitter, just for entertainment's sake, Wendy's is a great follow.
Yeah, Wendy's, and they were one of the first companies that's a huge company that, you know, they never want to be too politically incorrect because right. That ends so poorly mm-hmm. for so many other companies. But Wendy's was the first, I think, one of the first really creative Twitter handles out there to say things you wouldn't expect a large business like that to say.
Yeah, because there's like almost all businesses, I would imagine, have a presence on Twitter, but they're usually very, very protected and very shy what they say. You know, they're walking on eggshells. Wendy's slings some mud.
And remember when Wendy's put out an attack, a diss song, rap diss against all the other burger chains?
Yes.
So Wendy's on the forefront of Twitter clapbacks, as they call them.
And they're clapping back now at, I guess, a new player in the burger world. Are we supposed to say IHOB?
I guess. It doesn't really roll off the tongue like IHOP. Maybe it's just from years and years and years of saying IHOP, but IHOB.
IHOB. So, International House of Burgers. That's what they are now, right?
Correct.
Are they, I mean, do you know, are they dropping the other? I mean, we're still able to get pancakes or what?
I haven't seen word on that. You'd think they wouldn't get rid of the pancakes. I mean, that's what they're known for. But they put it out last week, just kind of a teaser picture that just said IHOB with them flipping the P upside down. So they left people for days wondering what the change would be. My guess was breakfast. They were just trying to be
now that would make sense. General. You're saying, hey, we're here for breakfast. If you're looking for breakfast at 11 o'clock at night, we're your place. You're at 7 o'clock. That would have made sense marketing wise.
But it turns out it was burgers, which some people guessed. I think those people were probably clued in, had some leaks behind the scene at IHOP. So same people leaking information maybe from President Trump's meeting room. Leaking that it was burgers and not breakfast, but they have to keep the pancakes, right?
I would think so. We'll keep our eyes on this. I mean, of course, International House of Burgers reminds me of the Eddie Murphy. I think it was Raw. It wasn't Delirious. I got to figure out, was he in the purple and black leather suit with the gloves or the red and black leather suit with the gloves? It depends. That's how I know.
Red and black was Raw, right?
Red and black, I think, was Raw.
Right.
But he did the bit about house burgers.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
Because he talks about being a kid wanting to get McDonald's, right? He really wanted McDonald's, and his mom did, and, you know, I can sympathize with this. Mom saying, oh, no. We're going to go home. I got all the stuff. I can make you exactly what we got there. And then she makes what's called a house burger. And little Eddie Murphy's lament. He's telling his story. His lament of all the other kids with their hamburgers, and he's stuck with the house burger. So International House of Burgers makes me think Eddie Murphy and house burger.
Well, it appears they aren't getting rid of the pancakes. Darren Rebelez, he's the president of IHOP now.
IHOP.
Or the restaurant formerly known as IHOP. He said, we're definitely going to be IHOP still, but we want to convey that we are taking our burgers as seriously as our pancakes.
Ooh, wow. Yeah,
they're taking them serious now.
Seriously, they're hardcore. All right, so the latest in the burger wars out there, you know what would be, I got an idea. How about this for burger wars? How about y'all do, like, remember back in the olden days when they'd have some kind of, like, a gas war or something? That's been a long time ago. But this gas station would lower it some, the other one would lower it more, and they'd lower it trying to get people come in there. I got an idea, burger joints. Why don't y'all lower the price of all the burgers and the combos and all that and try to run the other ones out of business? Come on, y'all do that?
We need a burger war.
How about we start? That's what we need, is a straight-up price set. If IHOP wants people to come in now for burgers and not pancakes, then sell us like a dollar burger or something like that. And then we'll come in and check it out.
Yeah, I'm for that. And you know who's going to also come out a winner in this like they always do? Chick-fil-A. Because they don't have the burgers to begin with. They always riff on not having, of course, the cows in the commercials. Yes. So I think we should probably expect an answer from Chick-fil-A soon, too.
Okay, we'll see. I don't know if Chick-fil-A's Twitter cred is anywhere like Wendy's or anything. But
no, they're kind of, you already know where Chick-fil-A stands,
yes,
basically.
That's right. Well, we'll watch for that. All right, keep up with us at FM Talk 106.5 on Twitter. Dalton, thanks for the update. And also coming up today, I'll hook you up with tickets for the 16th annual Mystic Striper Society Fishing Rodeo. They're fishing on Saturday on Dolphin Island. Of course, this is for kids and big kids alike. And, you know, it's a nice thing if you're looking for a great way to celebrate Father's Day. A nice weekend on the water, doing some fishing, competing in the Mystic Striper Society Fishing Rodeo. Sometime this hour, I'll hook you up with a pair of tickets for that. Y'all stay close. And when we come back, is this what national marijuana legalization looks like? Is this the beginning of the change in our country? We'll give you some of the story and some clips and hear from you all this hour.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106. Got it done.
Make the note. I got me. make, no.
You stand there with this big house bird.
International House of Burgers, right? House Burger. First thing I thought of, Eddie Murphy, House Burger. Hello, children of the 80s. What's up? All right. Get into this here. As the president last week commenting as he was getting, I think, on Marine One, I get all the sounds of the engines in the background blend together to me. I think it was not Air Force One. I think it was Marine One. He's getting on the helicopter and made some comment about a proposal here to change the federal outlook or the federal stance on marijuana. It's a congressional bill that would drop the federal ban on marijuana. Something similar to this, and this is what got us talking about. Number one, actually, I pointed out and I retweeted that story today from USA Today when they had the big shocking thing that said, hey, pot legalization advocates, you have Jeff Sessions to thank for this. Of course, I said back when he was confirmed, I said, if you are somebody who wants to push for federal decriminalization of marijuana, Jeff Sessions is your best friend because he is going to enforce the laws, which is going to make people in the legislature uncomfortable, which means they will have to change the law. It's the best thing. The willy-nilly, a la carte type of enforcement that was done under the Obama administration Holder, that was a problem. Somebody who will come in and say, well, this is the law, we'll enforce the law, makes Congress get off their duff. Congress is famous for, you know, having their cake and eating it too, or smoking the weed and have... The fact that Jeff Sessions did what he is supposed to do and go in and say, I'm going to enforce these laws, is what is making this happen. This is why, don't be fooled for any other reason. This is why it's happening. The states, the hue and cry from the legalized marijuana states, all this is coming from the fact that they have somebody in office that's going to enforce the law. All right? Here's an update from the folks at Westwood One News on the story.
The proposed bill, supported by a bipartisan coalition, would let states move forward with pot legalization without the threat of federal prosecution. President Trump voiced his support for the effort just before leaving Washington on his way to the G7 summit.
I really do. I support Senator Gardner. I know exactly what he's doing. We're looking at it. But I probably will end up supporting that, yes.
Nine states in the District of Columbia have already legalized recreational marijuana. Another 20 states allow for medical usage of the drug. Bill Michaels, Washington.
All right, so let's do a clip here. Let's run the clip from Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren, and her comment on AG Sessions.
Jeff Sessions has made the statement that he intends to come in and enforce federal law under the circumstances where Massachusetts, Colorado, and other states around the country have already changed their law locally.
Okay, so God forbid the Attorney General of the United States would enforce the law. Although there is a nuance, and we will get into the preemption clause here in just a little bit. Elizabeth Warren went on to say,
if the states have acted, if the territories have acted, if the tribes have acted, then the federal government's going to recede and say, your law is the law that controls within your jurisdiction.
All right. So that's what they would like to change. Here's her partner in this, you know, with the president mentioning it's a bipartisan program. Coming from Cory Gardner, a Republican, but a Republican out of a pot state, Colorado. And he says this.
Several months ago, the president told me that he continues to hold the belief that he talked about during the campaign, that states are the ones who should make this decision. That was a belief that he reiterated today, and I hope we can work with him to get that support for our legislation. This isn't the federal government changing the law at the local level. This is the state deciding to change its law. And in that scenario, then the federal government says, fine, states can be that laboratory of democracy. It will be allowed in that state.
I really do. I support Senator Gardner. I know exactly what he's doing. We're looking at it. But I probably will end up supporting that, yes.
All right. So the president would support this. The federal decriminalization of marijuana. And what I said is similar to what Supreme Court decided when it came to sports betting. Except in that case, they had actually carved out, I think, Nevada and Delaware to have it, which is how this was not challenged earlier, I don't know. You know, all I'm asking as an American citizen, a citizen of this republic, is that we have even-handedness in the way laws are applied across the spectrum. States, individuals, those kind of things. Well, you have a situation here that I have been asking since Colorado and then Washington State, and as you heard, seven other states have legalized recreational marijuana. And let's keep the discussion. We can put the medical part of it in, but let's just talk about the ones that are just telling you what it is. They're legalizing weed for fun, right? So these states have legalized it, even though the federal law says it's illegal. And I asked many times during the Obama administration and now since the Trump administration, how can you do that? How can you have something that's explicitly against law at a federal level operating openly in a state if you have a situation where you have the supremacy clause in effect? And we talked about that so many times. Federal law trumps state law. It's how it works. We've been on the receiving end of that bat several times here in the state of Alabama. So you ask this question, well, you know, why does it exist at all? There is a nuance to it that I don't think is discussed very often, which is interesting. There's a preemption clause. So this all comes from the Controlled Substance Act passed back in 1970. Congress passed the CSA. Inside the CSA, that we'll go into, it lays out the drug laws and the schedule. You know, we always talk about schedules of drugs. By the way, marijuana, a Schedule One drug. It's the highest ranked. Schedule One drugs are LSD, heroin, marijuana, ecstasy, peyote. Peyote's on that list. That's what they did in Young Guns, right? Peyote. And methaqualone. Those are all Schedule One drugs. At the top, the worst. If they're the worst drugs, they've got marijuana listed there with those. So that's part of what the CSA, this congressional act, Controlled Substances Act, passed back in 1970. But part of that, they have a little exclusion here. It's one paragraph, and it's the preemption clause within the CSA. It says, no provision of this subchapter shall be construed as indicating an intent on the part of the Congress to occupy the field in which that provision operates, including criminal penalties, to the exclusion of any state law on the same subject matter which would otherwise be within the authority of the state, unless there is a positive conflict between that provision of this subchapter and that state law, so that the two cannot consistently stand together. All right, so that preemption clause is important, and I think Congress probably put it in there so they didn't have to be in the business of enforcing drug law. Because if you use a supremacy clause and look at the look at immigration, look what happened with immigration when state of Alabama and others, but state of Alabama said, hey, we're going to do what the feds aren't doing, right? During the Obama administration, state of Alabama said, we're going to enforce federal immigration law, and attempted to do that, right? What happened? Right, that gets slapped down. The court says, that ain't your business. You don't get to do that. That's not your part. That is not your job. In the same way, if they didn't have this preemption clause in the CSA, then the states could say, to heck with you, I'm not going to enforce any drug law. You've got to get the feds to do it. And while federal, like DEA and other groups, are working with interstate, they're not so much working with intrastate, right? They're getting the stuff coming into the country, going between states, but not so much localized drug dealing, even though quite often all those webs connect. But they put this preemption clause in there, so the job of enforcing this federal law was borne by the states, counties, and cities. They have to pay the money to have police forces making the arrests, putting people in jail, then putting people in prison, right? Doing all those things, all those operations. That's the job of the states, because you got to think, if it wasn't, and they said the states couldn't enforce that it was wholly a federal law, then the feds would have to enforce every part of the drug law. So that's why they put that in there. That is the nuance. That is the little groove that's being used by Congress to try to change the federal ruling on marijuana. Now, the question is then, if that is okay for marijuana, then why should there be federal law? I mean, seriously, and once again, I think I like anything that remits power back to the states. Once again, if you can detach yourself from the fact that it's marijuana and just say it's widgets, it is a move here to give power back to the states. But if yes for marijuana, and this is why this slope is so slippery. Number one, we're dealing with drugs, okay? None of this is good for anybody. And the people say, oh, listen, in a medicinal way and using cannabinoid oils and all that, yes, it's medicine. But beyond that, it's not good for anybody. But couldn't you make the argument then the second this goes through Congress, and the they say the feds are not in the business of calling marijuana illegal, doesn't that just bring the next drug and the next drug and the next drug in line? And so, yeah, me too. Whatever, this is the heroin lobby. Whatever, Pete, this is the ecstasy lobby. Dalton, I wonder what the ecstasy lobbyist would look like. But the next drug would come in line and say, hey, you did it for marijuana, do it for us too. But now you've got a challenge here. And you have a situation where they're going to say, well, the federal government's going to be out of it. They're not going to say whether it's good or they're just not going to, it's not going to be illegal. It's going to be like a gambling thing where state by state they can make that decision, which is what it has seemed like to this point with nine states legalizing recreational marijuana. I think we are in a better place if we have the feds out of it and state by state decided, because then you don't have a state openly breaking federal law and being allowed to do it. Talk more about this. I'd like to hear from you as well at 343-0106, 343-0106. It looks like something President Trump said he'd sign on to. So what about that? I mean, is it, can you get past the fact they're talking about marijuana or not? And just talk about it as a state's right issue, or is it all about the drug involved? 343-0106, 343-0106. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. By the way, coming up at 1 today. Today, the last day of net neutrality. My conversation with FCC Chairman Ajit Pai about exactly that comes your way just about 30 minutes from right now. All right, a lot of text coming in here as well, and I want to get to the story from USA Today, but one of the questions I'm posing here, kind of walking through what may be getting ready to happen. I like I said, I wrote this note to myself down over the weekend and said, is this what national marijuana legalization looks like? Or maybe better yet, versus commission, maybe it's omission, is this what the decriminalization at a federal level of marijuana looks like? And does that, what does that look like across the fruited plain? See how, let's look at gambling. So gambling, and finally one of the last one of the last parts of it to be undone was undone by the Supreme Court just a couple weeks ago, or actually about a month and a half ago now, I guess a month ago, with them saying, okay, you can have sports books. You can bet on sports. Leaving it up to individual states to make that decision. I'm going to hold back a couple exceptions, but with that being said, a situation where the states are laboratories of democracy, I think is a good thing. I think it's good if people in the state decide they want to do something. But the question is, and listen, I know all the nuance. That, hey, you have the legal marijuana in California that goes across the border into other states. I get it. These issues are real things that happen. But if you take the fact that there's marijuana out of it, do you like a situation where the feds get out of something that maybe a lot of people don't think? I mean, you have 60-some-odd percent of people. This is the problem. You have 60-some-odd plus percent of people in the country believe in decriminalization of marijuana, recreational marijuana, I believe. But are they saying that because they want weed, or are they saying it from an academic level, saying that it's good for the states to have more rights to make these decisions? I don't know. I don't have time to interview all the people on that. But it's interesting how we've gotten here. And, oh, yeah, somebody's asking, what about the schedules? Yeah, I mentioned marijuana is a Schedule I drug as per the CSA, Controlled Substances Act. Schedule I drugs are heroin, LSD, ecstasy, methaqualone, and peyote. And marijuana's on the list as well as a Schedule I. Less than those schedule, like cocaine, methamphetamine, methadone, those are a level lower. Oxycontin is a level lower. So marijuana is higher up on the schedule list. Now, somebody on the text line said, and I don't know if this is true or not. I mean, it sounds somewhat believable, but I don't know it for a fact, that Nixon, which it was President Nixon at that time, signing the CSA, slipped the marijuana in as a Schedule I because he thought marijuana made people come out against the draft in the Vietnam War. I need to read up on that. I have not educated myself enough on that. Jerry asked a question here. Jerry, I don't have an answer for you. Jerry said, Sean, if a state has laws against indecent exposure and then changes to allow indecent exposure, what happens to the law federally is not changed to allow indecent exposure? You know, I don't know. That once again, if there was a federal law, okay, Jerry, flip it around, though. If there was a federal law, and they're going to argue that there's victim crimes versus victimless crimes, right, Jerry? That'll be part of it. But if you had a federal law against indecent exposure, I'm going down a ridiculous rabbit hole, but I like it, and nine states decided that it was okay to indecently expose yourself, I would argue that there's a federal law against it, and because of the supremacy clause, the Fed should be enforcing it. They should be overriding state law. That's how I feel about where the marijuana law is. It's you've got nine states in open, flagrant opposition to a federal law. And I mentioned way back when he was confirmed that we would, because Jeff Sessions is a rule of law person, and obviously he has a bent on drug things. He it's been a thing he's done all his career. But he's going to enforce the federal law, and it's going to finally make something happen. I said it back then. The best thing for those folks who want to push towards the legalization was Jeff Sessions, because the politicians aren't rule of law. The politicians are looking at these polls come back, and, oh, this many people, they want weed, and those other people want weed, and this and that and the other. Okay, they're going to move, especially the House and to some degree the Senate, move with the whims of the people, where the judicial branch and law enforcement is going to, let's hope, except when Holder was in, enforce the laws of the land. And so the best thing that could happen was this threat. You heard Elizabeth Warren talking about it, Cory Gardner talking about it, that this this threat of enforcement is making Congress move here on changing the law the way it should be. You shouldn't have, oh, well, we're not going to do anything to start any trouble. We're going to leave that law in the books, but we're going to let these states openly oppose it. Story from USA Today that is just like torn from my headlines of a year ago. Jeff Sessions hates marijuana. He's made that plain in multiple colorful quotes, from stating that good people don't smoke marijuana to arguing we need grown-ups in charge in Washington to say marijuana is, in fact, a very real danger, end quote. He also may turn out to be the best thing that's happened to the marijuana reform movement in Washington. For years, marijuana reform has moved at a snail's pace in Washington, even as more states, now 29, legalize medical marijuana and increasing numbers legalize adult use of marijuana. I'll call it what it is, USA Today. It's recreational marijuana. It's people getting high. Congress held back. Occasional efforts to remove marijuana from the schedule of controlled substances have been rejected, and advocates have had to fight every year to make sure Congress included an amendment to its appropriation bill to protect states that legalize medical marijuana from federal interference. Because it's been year in, year out, they have to do that. In August of 2013, on the heels of the success of marijuana legalization in Washington and Colorado, reformers achieved a federal coup when Deputy Attorney General James M. Cole issued guidance to prosecutors limiting the situations in which they could enforce federal criminal laws on marijuana. Remember we talked about the Cole Amendment, the Cole Memo? That's what this is. That memo created space for states to proceed with legalization and for businesses to begin operating with some comfort that people relying on the state law could not be prosecuted under the federal law so long as their activities fell outside certain federal priorities. See, they did something here to keep in 13 to keep Congress from having to move. They let them have their cake and eat it too. And at this point, with the aggressive push from Attorney General Sessions, Congress has got to have to get off their duff, man. Back in January, you remember this is how it all went down, much to the hue and cry, Attorney General Sessions rescinded the Cole memo. Perhaps he thought the decision would chill further reform or spread fear among the industry. At that point, we argued once again, what this does, it'll make Congress make a decision, and you're seeing it. Goes on to say in the USA Today story, instead, his move seems to have galvanized policymakers. Duh. That same month, Vermont announced that it legalized marijuana. Cities like Albuquerque, Savannah, Georgia, Baton Rouge, Louisiana are decriminalizing it. And now we're seeing a sea change in Washington in both parties. Oh, wow, things have changed. In response to the session's decision, Senator Cory Gardner, Republican from Colorado, threatened to block all Justice Department nominees. Eventually, he said he extracted from Trump a commitment that the Justice Department would not interfere with legal marijuana in Colorado, and Trump would support legislation to protect states that had legalized medical and adult-use marijuana. By the way, that's a new euphemism. Don't we need to write that down? Just the way that undocumented immigrants took the place of illegal immigrant. It's not recreational marijuana. It's adult-use marijuana. Come on, USA Today. Last month, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, historically not a big proponent of rolling back criminal laws like those on marijuana, announced he would be introducing legislation to remove marijuana from the list of controlled substances. Yeah. So, listen, there's people getting behind it. Obviously, there's big money here. Big money that's going towards lobbying for changes to the marijuana law, and probably for good reason. There's you got to call out hypocrisy here, and I'll call out some hypocrisy on the federal level beyond just the way it had been until we had Attorney General Sessions in there with enforcing over here and not enforcing over there. But you had a situation where, okay, we've talked about it a couple times on the show that the marijuana folks in the states where they're selling the pot, they got to do everything in cash. Right, I think we had a story a while ago, maybe a year ago, about all the security and all the, arming themselves and security measures and all and safes and all the stuff that they go through out there because it's all cash business because banks are federally regulated and they can't put their money in the bank because it's against the law. It's against federal law. So the banks who are under federal control wouldn't take the money from the pot people if they were honest about where it came from because it violated federal law. But the feds are still collecting not just states. We know the states are have been, the reason why you see a lot of states very interested in where the marijuana law goes is because they're licking their lips on the possibility of enhancing revenues for the state, right? Taxes. But the feds also are taking taxes from the marijuana sales. They got to take those taxes in cash, I guess. The federal taxes are being paid on the sale of recreational marijuana. While on the federal code, it is against the law. Now, that comes from the nuance that if you, there's a thing, even if you're violating the law, if you take a payoff or whatever, you're supposed to report it, right? So even though it's a violation of federal law, there are federal taxes being collected off something that is explicitly by federal law illegal to sell marijuana. Now, with all that being said, wherever you stand on the marijuana part of it, shouldn't we demand clarity? Shouldn't it be one way or the other? Shouldn't either they decriminalize it at a federal level and let the states make the decision or shut down every state selling, adult onset marijuana? What I call recreational? Adult use marijuana. Isn't it one or the other? Why is the in-between where we should be? Either it should be against the law, and the feds say it's against the law, and the feds will shut it down in any state that it exists, or you move to make it not the decision of the federal government and the decision of the states and let them make the law. So that's what is being pushed right now. That's what the president commented on the other day before getting in Marine One. And I believe that will be the debate going forward in Washington. All right, your take on it. We'll get it when we get back. Lots of texts, too. Read through those and talk to you on the phone. 343-0106, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, there's some real numbers. Let's see this. $135 million in taxes in Colorado's first year selling marijuana. And it says the federal government expected to pull in $1 billion in revenue from sales taxes between 2015 and 2019. So the feds, there's hypocrisy on both sides of this. It's why you have to have clarity. The fact that the pot dealers, the pot vendors, all the people in the industry up and down the line, vertically integrated there, or not integrated, but the supply chain, all those people are paying taxes to the federal government that says what they're doing is against the law. And it is against federal law, and you haven't, until now, had enforcement. I think it's an interesting turn. And yes, and Taxman, you and I are on the same page. Make Congress vote on it. He said, make Congress vote on the Mary. Make them vote on it. Once again, the piecemeal a la carte enforcement that has happened has let Congress sit there and wave a bony finger and say, oh, we don't like marijuana, at the same time collecting revenue from it. Right, and then not having to come down. No, let them vote on it. If the stats are correct and 60-some-odd% of Americans want it, then let the whether it be this Cory Gardner Elizabeth Warren bill or something coming down the road to force them to vote on it. Let's see. Bob say hit a nerve with me that I did not know what it, oh, about the government taxing, collecting money from the sale, yeah, of marijuana in the states. Once again, you got to call out hypocrisy on all sides and just be honest. And you have a situation where you have a federal government that should, if it's going to be against the law, now they can take revenue in the fact that they can seize marijuana and ill-gotten gains and all those things like they do now, enforce law, enforce it in all the states, make it even-handed among the states, or if they're not going to do that and they want to get the revenue from it, then make Congress vote on it, decriminalize it at the federal level and let the states decide. It'd be like gambling. All right.
Thomas brought up an interesting point, called in during the break, and he basically was saying, does this amount to the federal government admitting that the war on drugs was a failure?
You know, I don't know. I mean, and who, when you say the federal government, I mean, who, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you're going to say, oh, they, I imagine there's some people that were fighting the war on drugs that were doing their job that may not have believed that they could ever win it. There are some people in there that, you know, that are agnostic to it. There are some people, I think, that completely believe in what they're doing every step of the way. But if there's hypocrisy, it's rotten from the core. So mm-hmm. either it is, I don't think I'm being overly simplistic on this. If you're going to have a federal law that says something is illegal, somebody brought up the indecent exposure or whatever. If you have a federal law that says something's against the law and a state is openly mm-hmm. endorsing it or legalizing it, then if the feds don't come in and do anything, then next time they come in and enforce the supremacy clause, whether it's at Alabama, Arizona, somewhere else, somebody asked about sanctuary cities earlier, which Attorney General Sessions said he's going to enforce the federal supremacy clause there. If you have nine states openly opposed and they don't interact with the supremacy clause, the next thing you do, you have some other situation and they use it, that's wrong. That's not equal protection. That's not how it works in this republic.
Yeah, no, by the book means...
Well, unfortunately it does, but...
By the book means by the book. And if you're not...
Change the book if you don't like
right.
it, you know?
And not totally unrelated, the war on opioids and opioid, abuse. This administration and Jeff Sessions, I was listening to... do you know Dr. Drew Pinsky?
Oh, yeah. He's a Loveline guy.
Yeah, he's a Loveline guy. He's
on with Adam Carolla for years.
Right. Right. And he's actively involved in fighting back against opioids. And he said something on a podcast.
Oh, well, that's a brave take. Well, as opposed to the people that are endorsing, opioids are the best.
Well, he's invited onto the councils and things like that.
Right. Know,
because he has that PhD right
and
there.
And he has glasses.
He wears some very fancy glasses.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said something that I was listening to this weekend. He said that he met with Jeff Sessions, Ivanka Trump, and I think Sarah Huckabee Sanders was there, a lot of members of the administration. He said this administration is doing more to fight the war against opioids than any administration in over the last 15 years, which would be basically the entire history of these ultra-strength opioids that Americans have had so many issues with.
Okay, so, I mean, you can see that two ways, though, like everything. Number one, good for the Trump administration. Good for what they're doing now. They're doing a lot better job than anybody before. But also, I can turn around and argue the pressure has never been more
right.
to do something about it than it is now. Every day, every month, every year that goes on, there's more pressure. They're reacting to their clients, right? Mm-hmm. The states and their elected officials in Congress. So, I mean, good for the Trump administration, but you can also be cynical and say, yeah, of course they are, because it's the biggest problem, you know, drug problem of the day.
But from what I understand, and this falls under the line of medical marijuana, that marijuana could be a useful tool against opioid addiction.
Right. I've heard this. I've also heard it can do everything. I mean,
yeah, and there are people that say it can do anything and that you actually drive better when you're high.
You get a broken leg, man, just you smear some marijuana on that and you'll be fine.
But I think the craziest thing to me is that it's still listed as a Schedule I drug, because anybody, and I think most people that are even against marijuana being legalized, yep, most people would tell you that it is not the same or near as dangerous as those other drugs that you listed alongside it.
Yeah, let's see the people it hangs out with in Schedule I.
Right.
It hangs out with LSD, which people will argue doesn't need to be on there either, heroin, ecstasy, mm-hmm, methaqualone, and peyote. I don't know the peyote thing. All I know is they did that in Young Guns. I don't know how that
Yeah. Went. Well, peyote, I mean, they saw some things in Young Guns,
yes,
when they hit that.
Right.
Speaking of Lou Diamond Phillips, we were talking about him just a little bit.
Yeah, in hometown?
Hometown of
you
Corpus Christi,
yeah,
Texas.
You said it on Friday on 6.5 Stories, right? We also have, as you go to Schedule 2, less dangerous, they say, by the schedule. Cocaine, they're saying, is less schedule, less dangerous. And Oxycontin, which is the big issue of the day, is less dangerous. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk a little more about this. Plus, net neutrality ends officially today. What does it all mean? We'll get some take from FCC Chairman Ajit Pai. All coming up next hour right here on Midday Mobile.